Wow, liturgically, we're pulling out all the stops today. This is a lot for a Saturday morning daily mass, but it's a special occasion, really, to celebrate this fifth anniversary of the founding of YCP here in our local church. And I remember 5 years ago my excitement at getting this thing going. And in fact, I remember when I first ran into, the first time I'd ever been exposed to YCP, and I don't remember where I was. It was at some kind of national gathering of some sort, and I ran into the folks that had organized it and everything. And I mean, I was just like listening to these young folks and getting all excited about bringing this here. And when it all came together, it was just such a joy. And I continue to just be overjoyed and so grateful to all of you who are a part of this great organization, and especially both the current and the past leadership of this group. You know, it takes a lot of commitment, really, to lead and to organize this. And so I just stand before you today as your Archbishop, just so proud and so pleased at what has happened, what God has done and continues to do. And I wanted to be here with you today to celebrate with you and to assure you of my love for all of you and my support for what we're trying to do here together. You know, today we're coming, this is the last day of the kind of normal Easter season. Technically, Easter season ends tomorrow. After the Divine Office is prayed at Compline, and then we're back in ordinary time, it's hard to believe, on Monday. But so today is sort of the last Easter weekday. If you notice that in the opening prayer, it talked about how we have celebrated these Paschal mysteries. It's like, okay, the church is acknowledging that we're now coming to the end of our Easter celebration. And the church at the end, at the last day, gives us these readings. And, you know, I was praying over them and trying to figure out, well, what message am I going to pull out of these readings for all of you today? And I confess I struggled a little bit. And then it suddenly dawned on me that in the first reading from the Acts of the Apostles and the Gospel, we have three different apostles and sort of their fate being described for us, or at least the stage is being set. You had Paul in the Acts of the Apostles, and in the Gospel you have Peter and John. And what struck me is all three of these apostles of the Lord lived a different life and had their own way of participating in the beginnings of the church, in the spread of the gospel, in the building up of what Christ had come to do. Chosen by him individually, remember, after prayer, Jesus spends a whole night in prayer before he decides who he's going to call. And these three witness to Christ in different ways. You know, we have St. Paul in the first reading, right? Now, he's in chains now in Rome, and he gets special treatment. You know why he gets special treatment? Because he's a Roman citizen. But did you notice the whole story? It's like, my gosh, it's deja vu all over again with Jesus, right? The Romans want to release Paul because they can't find anything warranting the death penalty, but the Jews are complaining, so, okay, he ends up in prison. For 2 years, it says that he was in chains. But he continued to proclaim Jesus. He continued to proclaim the gospel of the kingdom of God as people came to see him. Obviously, he enjoyed some favor and freedom. And this is the same Paul who has traveled all over the known world, spreading the gospel, especially among the Gentiles. He's been to Galatia. He's been to Corinth. He's been to Athens. He's been to Ephesus. He's been to Philippi. He's been all over. In fact, that's one of the famous Catholic pilgrimages to do, right? Walking in the footsteps of St. Paul. So he's the get out there and get among the Gentiles and mix it up a little bit, especially in Corinth and Athens especially. And then there in the gospel we have Peter and John. Now Peter certainly did some travel, but you don't get the sense with St. Peter that he did nearly the travel that Paul did. Remember, early on in the Acts of the Apostles, it sort of decided a little bit that Peter will be kind of charged mainly with proclaiming the gospel to the Jewish people, and Paul will be primarily responsible for the Gentiles. So they kind of have a division of labor. And of course, Peter ends up in Rome too. But you get a sense that Peter's more like centralized. Of course, he's the Pope, so he's got to be a little bit more as the overseer of the whole church, as the leader of the whole church. He's got to kind of hold it all together. So he has his own special role to be a leader in the church, the leader of the church, chosen by Christ himself. And then you got John in the gospel as well. John, by tradition, is the only one of the apostles who is not martyred. He's the only one. He lives to a ripe old age. And it's interesting, because if any of you are follow the daily readings for Mass, you know what happened yesterday in this gospel, right? Jesus has his sort of, it just dawned on me, kind of had his come to Jesus moment with Peter, right? I never thought about that. That was Peter's come to Jesus moment, right? When he had to have the dialogue, Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Feed my sheep. Do you love me? Three times, right? And so we have that dialogue with Peter, and the Lord tells him at the end of the reading, after he professes his love for the Lord, he says, you know, when you were young, Peter, you dressed yourself, and you went about as you pleased. But when you are older, others will dress you and take you where you do not want to go. And the gospel says it was by this that Jesus predicted the death by which Peter would glorify the Lord. And by tradition, Peter was crucified upside down because he didn't feel worthy to be crucified as his Lord was. In fact, if any of you ever get to Rome and able to tour the Scavi tour, what they call it, the excavations under St. Peter's Basilica to the tomb of St. Peter, part of the presentation is that the Circus of Nero stood right next to the Vatican Hill there, and the obelisk, that the famous obelisk that's in the square of St. Peter's, was actually in the center of the Circus of Nero. And it's sort of surmised or speculated that maybe that was one of the last thing that Peter saw before he closed his eyes in death, was that obelisk in the middle of the Circus of Nero where he was crucified. I always think about that when I look at that obelisk. That was there at the time of St. Peter. And Peter may have gazed on that as his last sight. And so he suffers that kind of a death. And, you know, Peter, even now, you know, we're getting to the end of the gospel here now, and, you know, Jesus is just about ready to leave, and it's like Peter still doesn't get it. He's still a little bit slow on the uptake because now he's concerned about John and say, well, you know, you told me all this, what's going to happen to me? You kind of get the sense he's looking at John. He's going, well, what about him? What's going to happen to him? You know, and the Lord just kind of, it's kind of a rebuking. He says, why do you care? What does it matter to you if I leave him? You know? It's kind of like, it's none of your business in a sense. You do what you're called to do. I have a different plan for John. John will be the last of the gospel writers, what we think is probably, well, it's clearly the most theologically developed of the gospels, because he's had a lot more time to think about it. The church has had a lot more time to pray about it and discern into the depths of the mystery of Christ. And he will write on the island of Patmos, we'll have the revelations that we read about in the book of Revelations. You know, so he has a very special role to play himself in handing on the faith. I guess why I'm emphasizing this is that the more things change, the more they stay the same. And each one of us has our own unique role in how we will participate in the mission of Christ and the mission of the church. Every single one of you is an individual. Every single one of you is a unique treasure in the heart of God. Please believe that. You are not just some, I don't know, random human being that's bouncing around the world trying to figure it out. You've been chosen. God has chosen you from all eternity, just like he chose Paul and Peter and John. He had a plan for them. But just because they're the apostles doesn't mean he doesn't have a plan for you and for your life. He does. And it's unique to you. It's only yours. And it's been in the mind of God from all eternity, his plan for you and how he wants you to participate in this mission 2,000 years later. And each of you will make your own contribution. Each of you has your own gifts and talents, your own personality, your own tendencies, your own interests, your own ways of serving. But together, you all serve the same mission and purpose, to proclaim and witness to the gospel of Jesus Christ, just as Peter, John, and Paul did. And young people especially, this is so needed in the world today. So needed. You know, I've been promoting, and many of you maybe have heard of it, the book, you know, From Christendom to Apostolic Mission. The age of Christendom is over, sadly. But that's okay, because we live in a new time. We live in a new apostolic time. We are not unlike the church in the early pagan Roman Empire. We're kind of like back there again. Now, a lot has changed, so it's not a perfect analogy, but it's similar. We're surrounded in a culture that is at best indifferent to us, and at worst, hostile to us. We'll get into the LA Dodgers. Google it. I know you all know how to Google. But it's exciting. I'm not, honestly, as your archbishop, I am not discouraged. I am not pessimistic. I'm not necessarily optimistic, but I'm hopeful. Because we live in a time when Christ is counting on us in a unique way, like he counted on those first apostles and the first disciples and the first martyrs, the first virgins and confessors and fathers of the church. He's counting on us now in our time to step up and to proclaim the gospel with apostolic fervor and zeal. I don't know, I think it's kind of an exciting time to be a Catholic. Maybe I'm a little crazy. I think it's a great time to be alive. Yeah, we could have chosen a simpler time. But while the world and society and culture literally goes off the rails, we hold fast. We hold fast to Christ. We hold fast to the gospel. We hold fast to the teaching of the apostles, as did those first disciples. And just watch out what God is going to do. God has already and is continuing to light a fire in this local church. And you are a big part of that. And I want us to join together to set Well, I'm responsible for all of Western Oregon, but you know, you're mostly in the metro area. So let's just set the metro area on fire with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Amen.